So this is teaching on the relationship between the teacher and the student, and it is full of material for many kinds of scandal and amazing kinds of growth. So the question of the teacher in a relationship, you know, with a student is very much dependent on what the student wants to learn. If the student wants to learn how to live better, how to avoid suffering, how to do things which are basically useful and will bring good results into her or his life, then in that case you actually don't need a teacher at all. You need a book. Of course, if you can meet with a teacher, it's very good, somebody to show you in a practical way. But if your main goal is to avoid your own problems and just behave in a more useful way in the world, you can do all that with a book. Also, if you want to develop an inner life, you can probably do very much of the work also without one direct teacher holding you and showing you your different potential. You can go to a lecture here, you can read a book there, you can develop a good feeling there, and so on. And also here, it's not essential. And actually, if Buddhism should disappear right now, everything should be gone. And in 500 years, they would find all the different Buddhist teachings and instructions and so on again. It would be possible to revive the two levels of Buddhism, which are called Theravada and Mahayana. These two kinds of teaching, one would really be able to revive, you know, because you could do it from the books. The Theravada would just be like reading what the Buddha says and then deciding this fits with my experience and then, you know, avoiding as well as one can. So, generally, the teachings we today call Theravada, which are used in Southern Buddhism, the teachings on cause and effect, the teachings on how to do, think and say, what is useful and avoid what's harmful, these teachings actually you can do to a very high degree without a teacher. And as I said before, if the teachings of the Buddha would disappear right now and they would be refound in 500 years, then at that time, you know, that would be enough. You know, we could reconstruct that level of teaching from the experiences of mature people and what the Buddha says. Also, what concerns the teaching which is called Mahayana level, which has to do with compassion and wisdom, with one's inner level, probably one could do most of it also just from, you know, dead sources like books and explanations and so on. One can, of course, develop a lot more quickly if one has a real teacher, if one has an example that one has a contact with who shows one how to be practically compassionate and how to balance the compassion with the wisdom and not get sentimental on one side and not get bureaucratic on the other side and so on. There's a benefit in having a teacher. But probably, you know, a person of some intelligence and some independence and so on could reconstruct the Mahayana level from a book or several books that they found. But what concerns the highest level, the level where it's a question of direct experience, where a living flow of experience is transmitted from the teacher to the student, you know, then there is no possible way that this can be passed on or that this without a teacher or that teachings like that could be resurrected afterwards. They all go back to the Buddha. They go back to the Buddha as a living stream of beings holding that experience, passing it on to each other till today. And there would not be any chance. That's also why in the Vajrayana level, the Diamond Way level of Buddhism, whether it's some of the Zen or Chan schools or it's the three old schools of Tibetan Buddhism, that whichever of these schools it is, that the teacher is so very important. Not because he's thick or thin or she's nice or not so nice or whatever, but simply for the reason that they hold the living stream of experience. So when there is so much power there, when so much is happening, when so much energy is there in a relationship, and so much development can happen quickly because one is able to identify with the teacher and, of course, not become a carbon copy of the teacher. This was never the idea. But through one's confidence in the teacher, one is capable of entering the fearless mirror cabinet which he has created out of his certain certitude and completely certain conviction about the nature of mind. You can go in there and you can look in this mirror cabinet and you can see your own face from so many different sides, you know, till in the end you know it. In a situation with such great power happens, you know, with so much development and so much energy happens inside oneself, there, of course, you know, there's a chance for very great jumps forward, but there have also historically been the chance for very big falls. Now, I won't talk about the Christians who mainly kill each other, you know, like, you know, wherever they go, places like, you know, Juana, where 900 people made suicide, or Waco in Texas, where about 80 made suicide, and the Solar Temple in Switzerland, and so on, you know. I mean, well, also a few dozen made suicide in Canada, and so on. Now, we'll just talk about Buddhism, right? That's the subject, and we have to clean our own house first, right? And here, actually, it's very, very important, you know, that the teacher is straight. In a relationship like that, both the teacher and the student have to bring something. What the teacher has to bring is a knowledge of what he's doing and the compassion, the real wish to benefit others. Of course, there are many kinds of teachers. There are the monks and nuns that especially show what's good to avoid in the world, how to get peace, you know, and avoid life. Then you have the lay people who are showing how to make life meaningful and powerful and direct society in a good way, you know, make family life meaningful and things like that. And then we have the yogis whose main job is to keep the highest view at all times. So if the monk or nun come with family, they lost it. If the layperson, you know, has his children begging all over town and his lady is away and nothing functions and stuff like that, he lost it. And if the yogi comes in and looks like 3 weeks of rainy weather, you know, and he can't smile and he can't see anything interesting and he's down on his knees, right, and out and stuff like that, then, of course, he lost it, right? So, I mean, on the one side, the teacher, whatever teacher it is, you know, they have to keep the level. For instance, I'm a yogi, and if you ever see me depressed or low or weak or in trouble, you can kick my behind, you know, because I'm not fulfilling the level of my practice, right? But you won't. Anyway, right? But like this, you know, these are the different levels. These are the different things that the teacher has to keep. And the student on the other side also has to keep some things. And here, I usually stay away from, let's say, two traditional explanations, but there is a funny one that Hannah and I learned already in 70 when we started learning in the Eastern Himalayas. And it's, well, why not? Why not be a little cultural also, right? I'm sure you can bear with that. So one of the ways a student should not be is like a turned around cup. Like the teacher comes and says something and the student's mind just isn't there, right? Everything flows down the sides, you know, or something like that. Or you can see a cup with a hole in it, you know, that also doesn't work. And another way a student shouldn't be is really like a cup, you know, with some poison in it. That you learn something and think, oh, now I got a very good protector mantra, then I'll really hammer my neighbor tonight, you know, or really use my power to suppress that one, and so on. This, of course, also does not work. So just float, letting, not even listening is one thing. Being a cup with a hole in the bottom where the stuff just flows out is another bad example. And the third one is mixing the good teachings with a bad motivation, which is here explained as a kind of poison. Those different things, you know, one should really try to avoid when one is a student. It's really important. As, you know, there is no doubt that we learn quickest through a total immersion into something, that there's no way we will develop more quickly than if we actually, you know, can open up to a being who have a certain experience. If we can, you know, just make a contact there and learn to look through their eyes and listen through their ears for a while, you know, then we'll develop our own eyes and ears and everything else that we need. But during that time, we can have a view that is beyond personal, that goes beyond all the different limitations, and that is then what we can pass on to others everywhere. I'm here sitting next to two incarnations of probably the greatest guru of Tibetan Buddhism. Even the first Dalai Lama was a student of a student of his fourth incarnation. It's the Karmapa. He's one of them. It's the eighth Karmapa. His name is Meche Dorje. We've mentioned his teachings in a video on meditation. And here then is his 16th form as he actually came into the world, you know, as surely the greatest yogi to ever come to the West. And Hannah and I, my lovely wife and I, actually became his first Western students, and we had a chance to see this man. We had a chance to see what he could do. We saw how he never got proud, how he always looked to express others, how his mind was always spontaneous and effortless and fresh and joyful. And here I'm talking about really amazing powers, things that are really beyond, you know, what we usually meet. Sometimes we know who is telephoning before they telephone, before we hear the voice. Sometimes we are thinking of people and then their letter arrives, but he would just sit down, lean against the seat for a moment, and then he'd say, oh, these people are now going away, driving away from their home, and they will be here at that time, and they should talk to those people, and so on. And he just did that all the time. Before he died, a year and a half before he said what day he was going to die, he was so sure, he invited us to bring our friends. And when we came out on the, well, it was the first day of the 11th month, Western calendar, in 81, you know, then he died on the 5th. He freaked out the doctors in the hospital where he died by being totally conscious and all staying warm after death. When he was flown to Sikkim where we were waiting, his body was still warm, you know, and when we said goodbye to him, it was warm and supple. That was 5 days after he died. Then after that again, you know, he sat in meditation till he shrunk his body so small, you know, in a warm room surrounded by butter lamps and everything without any kind of embalming. And after that, when he was burned, his heart rolled out of the oven to his students. We were all standing around there at that time. So actually this is an example of a teacher. He's my own great example on how one can always infuse others with energy, how one can always find their power, how one can always, like, get them to, you know, to dissolve their limits and stop their different blocks, yeah, and really discover the different qualities and abilities that they have inside. So if we can get that happening, you know, a proper exchange between a teacher and a student, this is something wonderful. In today's world, if people are willing to really be critical, if they're willing to really understand that within a short time, 10, 15 years, they will have taken over major qualities of their teachers, you know, if they're willing to understand that, then they should probably look a little bit more critically at their teachers. They should really look at them and say, is he straight? Would I buy a used car from him? You know, do I trust him? You know, does he do and say the same thing and so on? But actually in the West today, one could probably within a few months, if one stays close to the teacher, make a kind of quite clear picture of how the teacher behaves, and if that's the kind of example and behavior one wants to put into the world afterwards, if he's too sweet or soft or not clear or mixes teachings or whatever else, you know, I mean, that one can really examine the teacher very, very clearly, you know, to see what is. And then probably within a few months, you know, one can get into a kind of real working relationship. Because we are more critical today, you know, and the world is much more transparent than it was. But in old Tibet, it was different. In old Tibet, they said straight out, the teacher checks the student for 3 years, and then the student checks the teacher for 3 years. And then if it works, you know, then they come together. Okay, we can't do that. So in 6 years, most people will be somewhere else doing something else and so on. But we should, you know, try to get this connection. We should make sure that we really want this. We should try to look into the man like you look into somebody's eyes in the 10th round, you know, in the boxing ring. And you should really see, you know, is he still going, you know, is he still convincing? Does he still have power and so on? Or has he given up? You know, you should really look deeply to the person. Is he what he says? And can I trust him? If you do that, the student is right and is on the right track. And if the teacher looks out and looks at the student and says, okay, I can work with him, then that's right. What's important for the teacher is always to not think he's the only one. For instance, I have my own style. Most of my students probably stole horses with me in Eastern Tibet in their last lives. So we have a certain vibration. It's always something happening, lots of fun, some excitement, things going on and so on. And if people come who would be squeezed by that atmosphere, who just wouldn't feel good with it, who would just feel out of space, then it's my job to say, listen, they have a very good Zen teacher down there. You know, he is very calm. You don't get disturbed there. Or here's a Theravada teacher. He will teach you what not to do, you know. And I mean stuff like that. It's also the guru's job, the lama's job, very much, not just to keep the students and say, oh, the more the better, but really spread out to different teachers that they know are good. And I think our centers are doing a very good job there, actually. I'm very glad about that. There's also a very good thing about Buddhism is you do not claim to have the only truth. You have a truth that fits you and your kind, and others will have truths that fit them. And this makes everything very easy.
Lama, do you have one teacher, or is it better to have more than one teacher?
The easier thing is you have one teacher who is aware of your development and where you go, and he will then send, or she will then send you to other teachers. We have to distinguish two kinds of teachers, especially in Tibetan Buddhism and especially in a lineage of transmission like ours, like the Kamakaji lineage, which is a lineage of the most famous yogis of Tibet. And here, if we look at that, we will see there is a lineage lama, and that's always the Karmapas, right? The different Karmapas that I have here in their different incarnations, they hold the lineage, right? I mean, they hold the transmission of the lineage, the teachings from the Buddha down till today. He here in his 16th incarnation, here in his 8th, right? This is what they do. And then there are the so-called root lamas. And the root lamas are the ones who give you the realization, who give you the root for the realization. And here you can go to different kinds of teachers. One may give you nundro, one may give you refuge, one may give you all the different things. But the really important root lama is the one whom you have confidence in, the one who is capable of showing you or who has made you understand that that which is looking through your eyes and listening through your ears right now is clear light. That is the Mahamudra teacher, the central teacher. And if you can hold that teacher in the middle, the one who really gave you that fearlessness, that conviction, you know, that certainty that this is how it is. If you can keep that teacher as the main one, and then this teacher will sometimes send you here to have one teaching, sometimes there to have another teaching, and so on. You're really making the best of both worlds. I would not advise what's called spiritual shopping. And especially, I would not advise going to all kinds of teachers and all kinds of lineages. You get a head like a watermelon and a heart like a hazelnut. You get 1,000 ideas, no experience. It really is like that, because even though all the lineages are good, they have different transmission ways. They use different words for similar things, similar words for different things, you know. And I mean, in the end, you just sit there with so many concepts, so many ideas, so much stuff going on, and you don't know what's up and down or anywhere. So I would say, enjoy the good of all the different teachings. And if you should decide to go to one of the Diamond Way schools, like the three old schools of Tibetan Buddhism, then, and really work with that and stay with that, you know, then do your own thing, share in the goodness that everybody else does, and follow what your teacher especially advises you to do. That means, in our case, nearly always, nundro, right? like foundational practices in there and do it, right?
Excuse me, Lama, what is the teacher's goal for his students?
Well, there are slightly different goals for different teachers. Some teachers, it's a little bit like lifting a pancake in the highest place, right? Or cementing out the holes in the ground somewhere. People have different goals. For instance, some teachers really want their students to become compassionate. They think compassionate is the very important thing. And if you have the feeling of compassion, this can pull everything else. Other people think that wisdom is very important. Other people, again, think hard word or renunciation or something, being a monk and a nun, you know, and so on, is useful to their students and so on. My own thing, I must admit, in the modern world, because that's what I live in, and I've seen people in all things in life, right? I mean, I really do, is actually to make people fearless and joyful. If you are fearless, if you rest in yourself, if you have your own, if you are rest in your own, if you're really fearless and joyful, you will be compassionate, you will be wise, you will have all kinds of good qualities. So everybody is trying to make their students independent and grown up and develop and so on in different ways. But actually for the modern world, I think that what we are doing in the centers I direct and so on, I think we are very close to the living nerve of modern society. We're right in there with what's happening in people's minds.
What can a Vajrayana teacher do today?
Well, he can't do very much. You know, things have really changed. If you read the old books about Tilova, you know, giving Naropa a miserable time, right? 12 major and 25 minor, you know, total catastrophes, or Mapa making, making Milarepa build half of southern Tibet into Hong Kong and then take it all down again, you know, and stuff like that. I mean, you know, you can't do that today. You get into the press, you get into the cheap press, you know, and stuff like that, and you are finished, right? You get the big stamp sick and you're out. So you cannot do that. Today, the way the world is today, and it's probably good that it is like that. I'm actually glad that it is like that, because I don't like the sticky stuff. Danes don't like all that too personal, sticky, close stuff. You know, we really don't like it. We like space. And actually, the best thing a teacher can do today is a compelling example, be a really good example, so that you really captivate people's interest. And then you can give advice. You can say, listen, I would do that, right? But even if people say, well, I'll do something else, you know, you must not take it personally. You say, okay, I'll pick up the pieces when you've done something else, and then we try something new, right? If I can help you in that way, and so on. So, you know, this is how the teacher has to work. The teacher today cannot be autocratic. They're always trying it. Some gurus, some lamas here and there, they try suddenly to get all their students, like Rigpa, for a while they tried to get all their students into uniform, right? And there was the Germans who rebelled and said, not with us, right? They had enough of uniforms, right? And, you know, other, and Trungpa also, Dhammadhatu, the whole thing there, you know, they tried to put their things, you know, to make them into penguins, all of them with ties and stuff like that. But, I mean, we will not make that mistake. We definitely will not.
Lama Oli, you as a modern teacher have many students around the world. You are traveling a lot. How can you keep connection with them?
Well, actually, you know, and believe it or not, the best way to be together with the teacher is to go to your local center. Because the local center is where he puts his energy. I mean, you are never closer to the teacher and less distracted by personal things and really in the energy stream and the blessing field than when you meditate in your local center or some other place you go. You are closer if you do a proper meditation there than if you sit on his knee and look into his face, you know, somewhere else. It is really true. The teacher is not a person. The teacher is a state of mind. The teacher is an energy field. The teacher goes in somewhere, puts his power somewhere, and even though he may just be there once a year or very shortly, every 2 years, whatever can even happen, right? you know, the energy field is there, and as long as you keep the bonds, as long as you remember the good things, as long as you try to work with yourselves, I promise you, you'll have more benefit from meditating there than just looking at the teacher when he sits saying something. It is true. I promise you that.
Lama Oli, what do you do if you find that your teacher makes mistakes?
If the teacher happens to make mistakes, we have to look at whatever level it is. I do not expect a Tibetan to come in and know our transparent modern society. I don't expect him to come in and know how to use a knife and a fork in such a way that my mother wouldn't roll her eyes, right? I mean, I don't expect that. On the level of all these things, we can accept all kinds of cultural things. What we cannot accept is if they do or think several different things, and especially what I will not accept, I myself, is if they treat our women badly. If they come from a culture that is not respecting women, or just respecting a few women, but not the ordinary women, and then they start abusing, mistreating, and so on, our women. This would be, for me, be the reason to really kick out a teacher. That would be the end. That would really show a human weakness on a very deep level.
What about the teachings that he gave you?
Oh, the teachings they gave, I'd always be thankful. I would always think that that the teaching then came from the Buddha. I would always think in the moments he taught and the things that he taught, this was it. And also, we should get away from too much focus on the teacher, because every teacher gets old, sick, and dies, and sin, there's a lot of suffering. And we should try to get into focus on the teaching instead. The physical, the body, all that stuff, you know, it's not the important thing. The important thing is that there is a teaching that's transmitted, and this teaching, used in the right way and with the right kind of principle, can benefit people and make them grow. So that would really be my advice. So if you keep what I said here, you know, if that is being kept, you can have very, very good relations. And there are some good lamas out there. There are some good Buddhist teachers in many places. You just have to look. And many of the most famous ones who ran most quickly after fame and so on, you know, they may not be the best ones. Yeah, so that was a little bit about teachers and students. I'm trying to be a good teacher myself, but I probably make lots of mistakes.